It feels a bit weird to be standing up here, I must say. How I came to stand up here is actually a lesson for me. So the story of how I got here is Claire sent me an email saying, would you be on a panel? Yeah, sure, I'll be on a panel. Then the panels got filled up and Claire sent me another email saying, will you do? And I didn't read the rest, I just said yes. Here I am. So read the email before agreeing to what you do. Now, I am aware that I don't have much experience in public speaking, so I've got 26 slides. I might burn through them all in 10 minutes, or we might be going here at 1 o'clock, which will be a bit of a problem because I have to be on a plane at 3 and I haven't packed. So it could go either one of two ways. Okay, thanks. Well, just beat me. So today's speech will give you an introduction to me. Hopefully, in corporate speak, we're going to achieve death by PowerPoint. I have been challenged to use a flowchart and a graph. Now, I have managed to use the graph. Whether or not I've used a flowchart, you'll have to wait and see. So, a bit of background. This is home. This is Whyalla, a picture of the steel plant in Whyalla. Whyalla is where I spent the first 18 years of my life. So let's just have a look at a brief family history. Now, as with all origin stories, I just thought, where do you start? Patriarchally, 1839, Richard Garrett comes to Australia. Now, I thought that was a bit early. So, in 1948, my parents were born. That's probably a bit closer. Over the course of their lives, they, mum and dad came together at Teachers College in Adelaide, and then in 1971, they were married. Now, mum was born up in Alice Springs, so she needed to move to Adelaide to finish school, and dad grew up in the Peterborough and the Barossa and moved down to do Teachers College. A fairly significant event for my faith development is Brenton passing, my dad's brother. That combined with, he says, a philosophy lecturer at uni who tried to convince him there was a God, convinced him he wasn't. So at this point, so in 1971 when mum and dad married, they were both committed Christians. By this point, they're not. Mum is, dad's not. And by saying dad's not, I'm not saying he just didn't go to church. He was anti-Christian, not, yeah. So in 1976 in Adelaide, Derek was born and they move up to Whyalla. 1978, I was added to the family. Now, I spent 18 years in Whyalla. My parents moved out of Whyalla in 2008, so they would have spent, 40 years there? So a fair bit of our family history is Whyalla. 1998, I move across to Perth. There may or may not have been a girl involved. And then in 2001, we may or may not have got married. We moved to Sydney. This move to Sydney was fairly traumatic in some ways. We were then fairly isolated from a lot of friendship groups. And in that move, we have discovered that we're not going to move anywhere else. We're very much Perth-based. That is a blessing and a curse, particularly for my work. It's 2009, we move back. 2012, my parents separate. So, not to air too much family laundry, but effectively, my father chose to leave my mother for an ex-student of his who was 21 at the time. So he's 67, she's 21. You can understand why I said a couple of weeks ago we're going to have some fairly weird family dynamics at my grandmother's funeral. I'll go into that further a bit more. And another significant, I suppose, was Glenn passing in 2015. Okay, so let's start at the beginning. Now, this is going to be a very visual presentation. So that's me, 1978, with mum. I had the blessing of a hyperactive father who took us a lot of places. So this is the Gawler Ranges. We spent a whole lot of time in the Gawler's Ranges, the Middleback Ranges, the Flinders Ranges, Gammon Ranges, all the ranges around the northern half of South Australia. We also spent a lot of time other travelling. So believe it or not, this is Lake Eyre. In 1983. In 1982, I've got a picture, but I wasn't able to get it in there. I've got photos of Ayers Rock covered in rain because we were there for Mum in Alice Springs on the way back. We actually got stuck at the border and had to go back up to Alice Springs, fly down to Adelaide and have the car sent down. So the following year, we went to Lake Eyre. Also rock climbing. Rock climbing was a family activity for the boys. I wasn't much good at it. I didn't have enough upper body strength, but it was something that we did. As you can see, it was very much from young through to teenagehood that we went and spent time camping. With that, I was steered very much into scouts. So I joined the scouting movement when I was 8 and I stayed in the movement until I was about 30 when I was a leader, with a couple of small breaks on and off. Now, this was a particularly important trip because this is what actually brought me to Perth. Sitting on top of the trailer is my brother. He met a girl and moved to Perth, and so I followed later on. I was really blessed to be in Scouts. They teach you a lot of initiative, leadership, and it wasn't really until I got into the workplace that I started to understand that not everybody is sort of keyed like that and what a benefit it gives you. So, schooling. Guess which one's me? So, this is my year two class, my second time at year two. I did year two twice. And as you can see, Miss Shepherd, who is on that side, by the end of the year, I was taller than her. So size has always been something that has made me stand out from everybody else. It has meant that very much I was bullied as a school student. And I'll go a bit more into that why. Apart from my size, there were other reasons for that. This also set the ground for me. A lot of my classes up until year 11 tended to be in the group of students with special needs. So the house was a combination of the first touch of the integrated special needs classes. So as you can see, we've got 3 teachers for 20-odd students because I think we had 4 special needs students. I was probably special needs in my own way. I didn't start reading until I was in year 2 for the second time. So I was a very late reader. However, having said that, by year 4 I was reading Lord of the Rings. Go figure. So this is the reason that I really stopped going to church. I started sailing. Sailing was on Sunday mornings and took up half the year. Now, sailing's a great sport, hellishly expensive, but a good sport. It does teach you to be independent and fearless and adventurous. So I really appreciated sailing. Highlight of sailing was does anyone know what a trapeze is? Okay, being out on a trapeze and having a tiger shark go under your butt. A little yikes, because about 10 minutes later we capsized. So and while I'm up here, I may as well truly embarrass myself. So yes, I did ballet. Okay, so as I was saying, I was very bullied and school was not necessarily the best. So at the age of 15, my parents had me IQ tested. So as you can see, lots of green to red. Now, this has meant that... So I was a smart ass at school, like in the not nice way. Just I couldn't understand that other kids were not able to process as I did. Now, I've got a lot of things on one side and two on the other. Now, to give you an idea of what those two are, speed of writing, I was in the sixth percentile. So that means out of 100 students, 94 would be standing in front of me. Spelling, 37th percentile. So at that time, at 16, I was diagnosed with dyslexia and dysgraphia. Having said that, that's not dyslexia as in can't consume information. The same IQ test gave me a reading age of 30. So it's very much an output. So the way you guys will experience this is, particularly in my written form of communication, they tend to be very brief. They tend to maybe not be overly warm and fuzzy. And that tends to be more just because it is an effort just for me to write. So you'll notice that my verbal communication is very different from my written style. So it's generally not about what I'm having difficulty communicating in writing is effectively why it is. So that's the way you'll experience it. Okay, so the teenage years, when my grandfather on my mother's side died, we actually were lucky enough to do this. So I was actually sent to America in November of 94 to go to school, and I did. I did for 6 months, 3 months, something like that. And so some stuff happened. I was living with an aunt and uncle who weren't quite prepared to have a 16-year-old teenage boy living with them. So I was meant to stay until April and then meet my parents. Unfortunately, the situation devolved to the point where I got sent home and then back again for the trip. But so what we did was we did Niagara Falls and a couple of places up in New York State where my mum was an exchange student, and then we did a long drive, including the Grand Canyon, Zion Canyon. Father's a geography teacher, so Banff, Jasper, the Red, and down the coast, and of course Honolulu and the Big Island of Hawaii. Things that has given me is obviously a perspective of America. America as individuals. America is a very pretty place. Another thing it's given me is, in the initial stages, we were up somewhere near the Adirondacks. So, you know, in meditation terms, when you're ever given the go to a peaceful, calm place, I actually have a picture in my mind from up in the Adirondacks of a forest with a lake, and it was just a cool, moist day. Forest, lake, and it's just etched in there as just a place of absolute beauty. Another thing I did was this. So I was a member of a dance and drama troupe in Waiala. We wrote our own scripts and performed. So yes, I'm actually fairly comfortable standing up here because, yes, I stood up in front of 300-odd people and performed my own script. And just because I'm up here embarrassing myself, yes, I was a hairy teenager. That was my rebellious stage when I was drinking, smoking a pack of cigarettes a day and so on. Now, this picture, as you can see, highly stylish, as usual, was actually a very significant event in my life. This is my brother's 21st. As I said, he had moved over here following a girl. At that party, his girlfriend's sister had some friends on as waitstaff, one of whom I happened to marry later on. So, family. Some of you were there and should remember this day. Ken, you should remember this photo. Thank you. So, yes, we got married in 2001. And I suppose the thing I want to say about family is living as a family is a choice. It's a choice that every day you have to put in the effort. It's not something to take for granted or accepted. To be honest, it's also being a dad is conflicting for me because I still feel like the hairy teenager. I don't feel like I have grown much since then. Now, between this photo and this photo, I was diagnosed with diabetes. Now, strangely enough, in putting together this presentation, I almost left that out. I do have diabetes. It is something that is constant. It is something where I have two things in my stomach at all times. One of them telling me what my blood sugar is, the other one putting insulin into my system. So, yes, it is something I have. It's something I live with. But it's not that big a deal to me, mainly. So, work. What do I actually do? Well, that's my title. I do work for this mob. They have about 150,000 people worldwide, so a nice small company. I work on this technology, so SAP. For you that are not aware, basically it's the technology used by very large mining companies to control their financial systems effectively and their maintenance systems and things like that. So currently I'm working for the Defence Force on their SAP implementation, particularly around managing their bases and the maintenance on their bases and things like that. So that's the actual company that I work for. So what do I actually do? I do pretty diagrams like this. So the pretty diagram like this is basically down the bottom we've got another system where you're keeping the records. We process it, surface it up for consumption. That occasionally requires a bit of this. And generally can turn into something like that. So that would be the end product occasionally. Other things would be pivot tables or reports or listings or things like that. So I'm in charge of making, or my job is to get the data from one place, combine it with the other bits and make it pretty. Okay, as part of my working life, I had the privilege to be personality tested. Yay, go personality testing. Hey, PD, it's great. Now, this is my vision of myself. So what you'll notice is that I rate myself as highly avoidant, which I am, generally, tend to be seeking approval, fairly competitive and oppositional. And you'll notice that I tend to just be oppositional because that's part of the way I learn. Now, the thing that confused me was this. The way other people see me is quite different to the way I see myself, which has led to today. I feel very fraudulent standing up here. I tend to feel fraudulent in my workplace because I don't feel that I'm competent or things like that. So my negative talk, internal self-talk, is fairly high. But apparently I managed to pull it off and other people see me as very humanistic and other positive things, which comes as a bit of a shock to me. Now, which brings us to why we're here today. Let's talk about faith. Now, does anyone actually recognise this picture? Claire, too? Yeah? No? No? Okay. This is the Buddy Christ. And it's a good chance that if you have not seen that picture, you will not recognise this disclaimer, because it is time for a disclaimer, because I'm talking about faith. So, I'll give you just a little second to read that. Okay, so there's my disclaimer. So it's not that I'm wrong, it's just that God has a sense of humour and, well, let's all move on. So now I'm going to throw up a couple of opinions here that I have around Christianity and about God. I have put them in a little bit of a confrontational style because that's how I learn about my faith, is arguing. Not arguing, but arguing discussion. So I'll say something, and if someone believes something different, come, talk to me, and I will hopefully see what your opinion is and maybe change mine. They're not tightly held positions. So I might argue them as tightly held positions, but they're not. So, first one, everyone will be reconciled to God. This includes Hitler. The Bible is fallible, with error, and not the final word. There is no problem with evil. If you've ever heard of the theodicy, because there is problems with evil, I don't believe there is a problem with evil. And the nature of God. I was contemplating this, and I actually believe the nature of God is slightly irrelevant. We don't need dogma about it. We don't need to describe it. It is. We seek relationship with God, so why get caught up on what the nature of God is? So let's actually talk about my faith. Well, most people describe their faith as a burning fire. Some people do. For me, it's more just a gentle candle in the background, where there's a probability that God exists, but also a probability that God does not exist, and so I'm not really sure he could, or he or she, well, actually, gender-neutral term, God probably exists, but I'm not 100% sure, but I'm prepared to accept the probability that he does, or they do. So, where does my faith come from? Yes. Where does my faith come from? This man, particularly. I had the privilege of spending a lot of time with Glenn over the 15 years between when I met him and when he passed. He was a real privilege to be around, a real gentle debater, and someone who was prepared to let you have your opinion and not even tell you you're wrong, just question it gently. My mum, she has had a very strong faith and still continues to have a very strong faith, and it gives her much pleasure to see that I'm exploring my faith. Okay. Other things that have informed my faith. Dogma, the movie that the Buddy Christ is from, and the disclaimer is from. They're both from that movie. It is an interesting movie and a good watch. And so the basic premise of the movie is there are two angels that have been cast out for heaven, and all hell is going to break loose because of Catholic Church dogma. It's quite an interesting one. It includes the 12th apostle, Rufus, who was left out of the Bible because he was black. The other two books are actually series. The Michael Moorcock one includes some fairly... A particular point that I find very interesting. So, von Beck in this series is a German count who is hired by the devil to get the goblet. Holy Grail, for Lucifer, in order that Lucifer then can get God's attention and have a conversation with God. Now, as part of this, he comes across a hermit who is basically torturing himself for the reasons of purity, as some hermits did. The interesting line in it was, "You and I serve the same master." Now, that, I suppose, just points to me towards the fact that people can believe they're doing something for God when they are not. And it is very easy to be pious, it is very easy to be holier than thou and believe that your actions are the actions serving God and they are not. The other one, the other set of books, and they have a combination with the Michael Moorcock books, is that they are not about good versus evil. Both of these books are not about good versus evil. They are both about order versus chaos. And it's really interesting when you look at God in the order versus chaos argument, because you stop talking about God as good, because both good and evil are part of God. So is order and chaos. Really, maybe what we're looking for is God is the point of balance, the point of balance. So if you look at the scribes and the Pharisees, the church today, there's a lot of prescription, a lot of trying to impose order on things. And that imposition of order is generally at the detriment of someone. Someone gets excluded because they don't fit that picture of order, or etc. So I just want to talk a bit about universalism. Now, I actually appreciate having to speak because I actually had to do some research to see whether or not my position of universalism was actually supported. Luckily, it was. Sort of. Okay, so the reason that I have a position on universalism is, well, let's take a random native. Slightly patriarchal and probably a bit racist, but... Okay, so if he dies, does he go to heaven or hell? Well, this can be a bit confusing, particularly when you bring in the missionaries. I'm pretty sure we can all agree that a child who has not heard God goes to heaven. So what happens if they're a bit older and they die? Do they? Well, I think so. And that's regardless, if they haven't seen a missionary, whatever, they've lived life, they get reconciled to God. Now, if we add a few missionaries, that's where things really get complicated for a lot of people. Because if this person dies and has responded, well, of course they go. If this person dies and haven't responded, well, to me, that is, well, just not right. Because what happens if that person was going to respond and just dies? What happens if there are so many what-ifs, what-ifs, what-ifs that it just does not sit with me, and so I have to sit with a position that everyone gets there, which then brings the uncomfortable thing of everyone, including Hitler. But. So, things that do support it. Colossians does support it. Now... the thing about the scribes and the Pharisees was particularly more for me about the hypocritical nature of the evangelicals. And I really see Jesus sort of calling them out. And for me, it's the evangelical people who are often saying, faith and works, that's what you need. Well, that to me is ascribing an order where there doesn't need to be one. I will... also acknowledge the fact that James, there are some verses in James that clearly point to faith and works needing, which brings me back to the Bible. To me, this is what makes the Bible fallible and errant, that there are points of direct conflict within the Bible. The Bible was written by man, yes, inspired by God, but written by man. It is also 2,000 years old and has been through many translations. So the word that we read today is possibly, highly likely, not the word that was written. Also, to say that God has ceased to have a relationship with us over the past 2,000 years is also false. So to say that the Bible is the Bible and that is the Bible, I think tends to leave out things like maybe the writings of St. Francis, who has clearly led a spiritual life and clearly would have something to contribute. Okay, how am I going for time? Nearly up? Okay, well, we won't talk about loving others then. I suppose just what I wanted to say on this is, particularly around my father, the concept of loving others brings a great deal of difficulty for me. And what does loving others actually look like in conflicting relationships? So, yeah, that's basically what I want to say. It is actually a point of tension for me between my Christian faith and my life, to love others and also be not speaking to my father. Now, the reason I'm not speaking to him is because, well, he refuses to acknowledge any of the pain or trauma that he has caused. And I think his ideal would be just pretend nothing has ever happened and go on. So... for me, I don't think I can do that. I think there needs to be some acknowledgement of what he has done. But then that brings in the conflict of, well, turn the other cheek. So I don't know. So just I suppose that's where we are. Okay, that's me, I think. Well, most of me.